Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second session on day two of the WBN Virtual Abu Dhabi Conference. I'm Alan Ferguson, Director of Employee Benefits at WBN, and I'm delighted to welcome you to a session entitled Centralizing Wellness Strategy, Global Trends and Client Panel. I would just like to thank Generali Employee Benefits for their continued support to WBN, which has been from many areas of their network. Back with us today from Generali Employee Benefits is Head of Global Health and Wellbeing Programs, Daniela Masters, who was first introduced to you back in April. Welcome back, Daniela, and I will let you introduce your fellow panelists in a minute. However, to say hello now, we have Dana Citron from Deutsche Post DHL Group, who heads up Wellbeing Globally. We have Barb Vader, who is Clinical Director at Morneau-Chapelle, and Daniela's colleague, Elizabeth Fields, from the Captives team. A few standard items to advise you of first. We are recording this session, and it will be made available to you afterwards within the WBN site on the member side. Your cameras aren't visible, and all participants are not able to talk to the speakers, and vice versa. Please participate in both the chat on screen and the social media feed with hashtag WBNVirtual2020 when you see fit. And remember, you can connect with our speakers on LinkedIn through the app. You can create your own experience within the screen you see, making windows larger or smaller as you see fit. There's no slides in this session, so please get the speakers front and centre. If you have any questions, please ask them in the Q&A box below. And we'll answer them directly, probably at the end of the session, or get back to you if we need to. Make sure and visit the conference app and connect with your fellow attendees, and here's to a great session today. When Daniela and I started talking about the session for this conference, it was obviously with the backdrop of COVID and the way in which health and wellbeing programmes have reacted, changed and evolved. Like everything else at the moment, this is a rapidly evolving situation, and Daniela thought it would be a great idea to have a panel, which you will note is a woman-only panel today, apart from me, but I will disappear in a minute, which would discuss those trends which have already been identified, and we have a great view across the market from Generali EB themselves, one of their wellbeing providers, and a client. So I think that combination is going to make for some really insightful chat. These trends point to a centralization of that strategy and more activity on captives and pooling as organizations appreciate the different funding models that can come with a global strategy. Inbuilt to all of this is opportunity to connect with your clients, talk insight and trends, and I encourage you to connect with Generali Employee Benefits to discuss that further. I'm really looking forward to this, Daniela. Over to you.
Thank you very much for the introduction, Alan. And we're very excited to be here. Although it's virtually, I think it's a very important topic that has, since the start of the pandemic, definitely gained some more, even more importance than it already had. The physical and mental health of employees around the world has been moved into sharper focus for many multinational clients and their brokers. And Generali Employee Benefits has seen not only a big amount of questions around coverage, exclusions, and waivers in regards to private medical insurance provided by the employers, but also experienced an increasing demand for the global well-being services such as telemedicine and employee assistance programs. And I'm very excited that I'm joined today by Dana Citron. She's already been introduced by Alan, who heads up, who's the director of health and well-being for Deutsche Post DHL. And she is delivering with the team access to cost-efficient healthcare and guidance in order to improve the health and well-being of the workforce around the globe. Welcome, Dana. With me as well is Barb Verder, representing the provider side, as Anna already mentioned, Vice President of Employee Support Service. And she's been with Morneau-Chapelle for more than 19 years, and we're very excited to pick her brain on everything that is related to mental well-being today. Welcome, Barb. And then Elizabeth is representing the captive side, working in the US in Atlanta, Georgia. She represents the employee benefits, working with the brokers, working with the insurer network, and the health and well-being benefits and medical benefits and or general insurance that benefits that we see. So I wanted to start out with asking you, Elizabeth, if you can tell us a little bit about how things have changed in the employee benefits space from your perspective, from an insurer perspective, since the pandemic started.
Sure. First of all, thank you. I'm honored to be here with such a distinguished panel of females. I will tell you that, you know, we've been very busy in the captive space. And back in March, when we all recognized that COVID was going to have a huge impact on the world, we immediately started getting a flurry of inquiries from brokers and clients on coverage levels. Is COVID-19 covered? And our first priority was delving into all the local terms and conditions to ensure our clients that they have coverage for the expenses related to COVID-19. So we focused a lot on that. And in fact, we have a great resource on our jeb.com. It's on our public space on all of the potential exclusions. What we did find actually is that where there were some exclusions, which were very few and far between, there were our network partners essentially waived those exclusions for either a temporary period of time or permanently. After mid-March, we get into late March, and there the brokers and our clients were asking, are we providing the right services? So now that we know we have coverage, are we providing all the services that our employees and their families need during this pandemic? Do we have telemedicine in all our locations where we're offering medical or even where we're not offering medical? Do we have the ability to deliver prescription drugs to home addresses? Are we offering the mental health support, EAPs? So it became more of, are we offering the digital services that our members will need? And then we got into sort of the April timeframe, and I noticed that the questions coming in were more, well, who's covering this? Because now that we said we can cover it, but we're finding out that really the governments and the social systems in many of these countries were covering COVID-related claims. So even though we technically were providing coverage, a lot of the claims weren't actually coming under our platform. They weren't being submitted to us because they were already being handled. And that was everything in some countries from inpatient to outpatient to even testing. So it was more an inquiry on how are we, you know, what are we actually paying claims on? And then we got into May, and we recognized that we were seeing a change in claims trends because members weren't seeking, they weren't going seeking non-urgent medical care. Anything that was elective was put aside during this COVID crisis. So we started seeing medical claims trends dipping down. And really that's what we've been watching since that, you know, April, late April, May time period. And what we really don't know is the ramifications and when it will start to tick back up. We're seeing some of that, but it's not clear yet the total impact of what we'll see on our portfolio and our clients' portfolios.
Yeah, super interesting. Thank you very much for sharing this. Dana, over to you from the captive perspective. You're working very closely with the local HR partners who are reporting into the captive. What has been your experience since the pandemic started? And has there been a difference between what the captive centrally is focused on compared to what the local entities are focused on?
Yeah, and again, thank you, Daniela, for having us today. I think we, very similarly to what Elizabeth said, that was sort of our timeline in terms of trying to understand everything all together, understanding where there was coverage. We had a lot of the local HRs coming to us and asking those questions, so we worked very closely with Generali to understand what the local insurers were doing. We also, I would say, as a captive, we are looked at as a resource because we work with 5 distinct businesses. So they were coming to us to look about what they can do in terms of their health and well-being, as our program actually, they report to us every quarter what they're doing. And through that, they will receive an insurance discount. So that was something that obviously was at the top of their mind, too, with everyone not being in the office. How are we going to run these programs? And what we saw at the global level for us, I think our management of the risk was the same, but our focus was more leaning towards working with the health and safety. We do have a counterpart at the global level, but we saw that come together a lot more, and we started to include the health and safety or the workplace health into our program because we knew that it was important to help drive that behavior through the organization. The local HRs, I think, were very concerned and engaged from the beginning throughout the organization. So we saw them wanting to look at how they could deliver and engage the employees in whether it be putting in telehealth where there wasn't, doing more things online with groups, with the behavioral health, so what they could do in terms of Zoom and things like that. So I think our focus shift, but our overall strategy, I think at the local and the global level have pretty much stayed focused on how do we be an organization focused on health.
Okay. And from your perspective, Barb, you're working for an employee assistance program provider and mental health has been a big focus. What was the development since March for you as a provider for mental health benefits?
Great. Thank you. So we cover, for LifeWorks by Mona Chappell covers over 180 different countries. So, you know, we certainly have a very large global perspective. I'll compliment what Elizabeth and Dana said, and the call to action, we need help, was felt at the organizational level. Many organizations were saying, we have good support for our employee assistance programs in some locations, but not all, and we want a consistent and easy to access program. So there was a lot of activity from the organizational level to get ready. It was, we need help, we need reassurance, are you ready? And certainly some reassurance around our ability to provide services virtually. Our organization has actually been developing and providing virtual online support since 2011. So we were well ready for adapting to virtual and did it pretty much instantly. So the first layer was organizations have been consistently focused on global programs, access in all locations, and certainly that's been very dynamic. We, at an organizational level, have been conducting what we call the Work Health Index evaluation or study since 2017 on 4 different regions around sort of baseline mental health in the workplace data. And during COVID, we started to, since March, we've been collecting sort of monthly updates in 4 major regions, UK, Canada, US, and Australia. So we've been collecting this as a way to become notified and alert to the mental health trends. And certainly we saw a dramatic shift in April. Our data said, you know, people are struggling with mental health issues, and we looked at that regionally, and all regions dropped. So, the study really looks at who, you know, your sense of your wellness and your mental distress. So that's the mental health index. Interestingly enough, just I think as Elizabeth was saying, the drop in calls happened early on. We were ready, an organization said, get ready, yet the employees were not calling in as much as we anticipated. Now, this is not atypical in a large incident, a global magnitude incident. So we certainly saw, you know, we've never had an event or a global pandemic at this level before, but certainly in isolated areas where there's been floods or disasters, we see that the people on the ground, the employees say, at a very practical level, let me get my home ready. Let's get to safety. Let's make sure my kids are home, my people that I love, that my fridge is stocked, and mental health goes lower on the hierarchy of needs. So we definitely saw our lines slow down. I always say it's like, almost like an echo. First, there's this, you know, magnitude of an issue, and then down the road, the real impact of it emotionally happens in a lag way. And so, you know, we saw a slowdown in April, in May, and then we started to see the wear and the stress and the mental stress start to creep up. And we are now at record levels and, you know, having more calls than we ever have seen globally. So that's the story since March at a high level.
Oh, wow. May I cut in there and just ask, you mentioned that you see an increase in calls after like critical incidences or big, big events. Now, this has happened on top of a lot of stuff that is happening in the world already. Can you comment on that?
Absolutely. And interestingly enough, we see it in our monthly results on the Work Health Index. And certainly, you know, when in the U.S., when we witnessed through media the killing of George Floyd, we saw racism and unrest globally. The mental health index showed the distress. And again, you know, these complicated issues become global issues where we're all witnessed. And we become alerted. So certainly that was a major, you know, another layer to this issue. You know, there's the things that happen in our lives that, you know, that are predictable, and then there's the unpredictable and how we respond. Another event that I thought was monumental, there was certainly some very distressing terrorist attacks. There was terrorism in Canada. We had, you know, a shooting where many people were murdered. And that certainly affected the Canadian population. We could see that spike in our geography. In Beirut, there was you know, the large explosion. Many organizations had people who were impacted either locally but remotely, family and other work colleagues that worked with people, even though that location seemed so far. In our virtual world, it becomes very close, and we see those situations impacting people's sense of wellness.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the digitalization and the being virtual all the time makes things a lot closer and a lot more directly affecting us. And that's actually a good way of my next question was around the digitalization of things. And Dana, you mentioned that you have changed a few things in your health and well-being program and included more safety topics. Can you tell us a bit more what you have changed, especially because you still have a big population who are out and about and not in front of screens. So can you tell us a bit about how you managed that shift?
Yeah, I think because we have the workforce that was still having to go out every day, there was a big concentration on the safety and creating a safe environment for people at work. And that was physically, so the workplace design changed a lot in terms of social distancing. DHL did a lot of things with masks, being handed out and making sure that everything was sanitized. I think, you know, it's gone even to the innovation sector where some of the locations now have vests that will, if you get too close, will actually light up. So we've really seen the environment change in terms of innovation in what they're doing, but also in terms of what we're including in the program. And then for the population that is at home, we've seen everything from the computer Zoom calls to WhatsApp chats. So it's really gone above and beyond in terms of a focus on the employees instead of the old way of doing things. So I think that actually sped up a lot of the innovation within our environment. Mm-hmm. And we are making sure, I know a lot of the local teams, even though they're able to work from home, the HRs, they are making sure to keep that culture and visiting the sites to keep up the morale of the people who are going to work and are delivering packages that you see every day or doing everything we're doing with supply chain and making sure that things get to the NHS in the UK. So we've seen those changes in the program and really embraced it at the captive level, because we know that will have an effect on the morale and mental health being a huge importance for us. It it helps create that environment or keep that environment.
Barb, have you experienced any client organizations that you're working with that have changed their approach in the way that they're working with mental health in the workplace, whether that's on a central or local basis? Have you seen any changes in the approach of organizations?
Sure. And in terms of approach, the biggest thing is the belief that in person is the best way to access support. Since about 2011, we've been trending sort of the adoption of modalities by country and also even within country, you see very big differences in adoption. What you see is that in North America, the adoption for virtual counseling has been very, very slow up until COVID time. In India and in other cultures where you have high level of acceptability for technology, low level of flexibility with work-life balance issues, and really nervousness and concern about anonymity and clinical topics, in those sorts of locations, India, for example, you see very high adoption of virtual support. And so, you know, COVID really leveled the field. The only way to get help anywhere was virtually, pretty much. So on a one-to-one seeking counseling, that changed dramatically. The other place was, you know, critical incident support is, you know, usually a group intervention. Many organizations around the world use it at you know, monumental times and, you know, mobilize, want to really engage their workforce and provide support. That also shifted 100% virtual. Interestingly enough, just to link a little bit with what Dana said, for those organizations where the culture and the work requires you to go in person, the critical incident matches by that workforce. And so you saw a lot of shift in preparing to go out and match the environment in which we were supporting. You also saw, you know, in the U.S., the return to requiring in-person for all of that support was much, much quicker than you see globally. Globally, the realization, the way organizations link employees and the way they build connections has shifted so dramatically. And so you see an adoption of about 50% of those group interventions staying virtually through COVID, which I think is monumental. I think the other big shift is that organizations saying, how do we promote, how do we change our promotions, how do we engage our employees, how do we heighten the awareness around all of the benefits, and particularly the mental health support. It's been a very dynamic time with our customers.
Okay, thank you. Elizabeth, and now over to you. Have you seen requests for specific focused or targeted employee have you seen a shift in the benefits that are requested from the clients that you're working with? And how have the captives been involved in general? Have you seen any changes?
Well, I will say that, you know, on the same line as Dana and Barb just mentioned, you know, the need for digital services across the board is so important to our clients and to the employees all around the world. And in addition to just mental health support and the EAP services, telemedicine, again, is just primary. That's what we have to make sure that it's available in all markets. And typically, we've been looking at local solutions first. And then where there isn't a local solution, we can offer global solutions as a way to coordinate that on a global basis. So we're working with all the brokers and clients to ensure that service is offered, whether it be from a local provider or through a more global platform. And then as far as other changes, I think, you know, the whole COVID-19 pandemic has really brought to the forefront. Our clients are really looking at exclusions in policies, and they're looking at eligibility definitions. So we've been spending a lot of time with the brokers and with our clients to really, you know, look through all the policies, really comb through the exclusions that are provided and make any changes. We've been updating lots of eligibility definitions. So we've been very busy, and I think it's been a good thing. I think it's just brought to the forefront the importance of the policy benefits. And I think, you know, sometimes we can all get complacent, and year to year things renew. And every now and then it's time to really dig in and look at what's covered and who's covered and how. So I think it's been a very busy period for us. I can say that, you know, we've all been working harder than ever, but I think it's the focus has been good. And I think it's all for the benefit of the covered members.
Yeah, so that's very interesting that you're saying that, because I think especially when it comes to the insurance products, you sometimes as an employee might even take them for granted, not really know what is actually in place. And this has lifted it to a different importance level that you really understand what is there, right? And I think that is probably something that has the situation that we're all in has lifted certain topics to a whole level in general. And let me go back to you, Barb. Have there been any specific topics coming up from populations that are seeking help? And is there anything different in what you see in your statistics now compared to pre-pandemic in terms of topics that people are seeking help for?
Yeah, there's been a lot of difference. So again, I refer to the Work Health Index. What we have, I'll say pre-COVID, what we would typically see as our sort of most dominant theme is, you know, depression and stress. Now what is rising to the top is sort of categories, more specifically work stress. Work stress is now presenting globally as the number one issue. Underneath that is financial stress, fear of losing one's livelihood or being impacted by someone else's livelihood. So the financial stress and uncertainty has come to the top. Then we sort of have underneath that as well, you know, stress with managing work-life balance and children, you know, the co-parenting themes and all these topics. You know, we've been very proactive to support globally within context to culture. The other two themes that have started to come up are loneliness, feeling isolated and lonely, and fear of return to work in person. Under the work stress, there's a lot of people calling and saying, I adjusted quickly to being virtual. Now I'm afraid my job is going to have me go back. So that sort of underneath the work stress is the fear of return. Another place is the what I call the milestone disruptions, the grief and loss around, you know, losing a loved one and not saying goodbye, not attending, you know, a memorial or a funeral in the way that we're accustomed to within our culture, and the delay in celebration. All of that, like if you've worked your way up to celebrate a very important milestone, whether that's a graduation or a wedding, those delays impact wellness. The people really feel overwhelmed and sometimes to adjust. And we've all been adjusting. The adjusting equals the stress. So those things have risen to the top. That's at an individual level. I think from an organizational level, the need for people leader resilience and high performer resilience and coaching, the level of change and adaptability is important to recognize for leaders. And we've been doing a lot of leadership coaching around change management, how to build empathy, particularly virtually, how to feel connected. I mean, we're basically inviting everyone into our homes. We're learning all about each other. Everybody sees my bookcase. If you zoom in, you may even see a picture of my family. These are things that are now being exposed to everyone. And we have to relate. The formality has shifted in the workplace. And leaders and people leaders and employees need to manage these shifts. And that's really coming to the surface. And I would also say the the not having a gold post when this will end. That leads to a lot of uncertainty for teams. People leaders are asking, how do I coach through this, you know, racism, diversity issues that my folks are struggling with, they're witnessing, and how do I keep them strong when I don't know when this ends? And so that sort of, those are the foundational themes that are really rising to the top for leadership. Mm. And I think, so you have to look at individual stress, and then you have to look at your leadership team and what they're coping with, because it's changed so dramatically.
Yeah, agreed. Dana, have you seen a need to support certain population, as Barb just mentioned, in particular throughout the pandemic? And if so, which ones?
Yeah, I would definitely say, I mean, we have seen a lot more of the manager training happening. And I think, you know, like you said, this has brought to light a lot of things that you would hope would be shifting in an organization, but it's now put it on a little bit of fast forward. So everything that we've been speaking about globally about shifting into a culture of health, we see that even more so because we are always talking about the management being a key. And we've really seen them step up, and we've seen trainings be provided, support for them and how they talk to the employees. So I'd say there was a shift there. We also, one of our biggest populations being the blue collar, we've also had to look at, they are in situations where maybe they are living in more close quarters. It's harder to self-isolate. So what can we do as an organization to help them? I know that one region had actually helped a few employees, you know, be situated in a hotel so they could self-isolate, so they could keep their family safe. So taking those extra steps for that population has been a big support. And also I would say, you know, we've tried to work with countries where the HRs are worried about being able to get testing. And we know everything has to go off of the regulation, but if there is something we can do to support them, as we worked with Generali in Indonesia, to help them gain greater access to testing, whether it be more likely the private, but it was something that we as the captive felt was important and the local HRs were really looking to have support on. So we've been trying to keep our populations, especially on the road, safe, because they do have to go into work. And of course, then looking at what we can do to help support the management and those who are working from home with more of the mental aspect.
Oh, that really sounds like the captive got a lot more involved in certain topics that might not necessarily be the usual topics that you have been talking about. Elizabeth, as you are working with the network, the insurance network, have you seen a similar thing happening that captives and pool management got more involved? Have they been requesting certain benefits that are different from what you normally see?
Well, I mean, I think, as I mentioned before, we are seeing a deeper dive into best practices, exclusions, competitive coverage locally. I think employers are feeling very paternalistic during this time and really wanting to take care of their members. And just as Barb and Dana just mentioned, I mean, you know, this is sort of the trend, is we want to take care of our populations all around the world. And I think that, you know, we haven't seen really different requests, but I will say that the focus, there is a large focus on mental health, well-being, and then of course there's a focus on claims activity. What's happening with claims? Where are our trends? What are we seeing? And it's so early to tell, but even within Generali, within JEB, our medical dashboards, we've added, you know, mental health or stress indicators. So around the world, you may not see a claim coded as COVID-19, but it could be pneumonia, it could be some other other sort of stress. There's not necessarily a mental health coding either. So we're seeing claims come in that for irritable bowel syndrome, for migraines, that could be connected to a mental health problem, but not coded as mental health. So we're trying to make sense of these claims and what they really represent, whether it's a COVID claim, whether it's a mental health claim, but presenting as something else. So it will be very interesting for us to see what happens over the next, you know, 3, 6, 9 months, even a year with the claims that are coming in. And I think that's really the next, now that we've sorted benefits and we've looked at exclusions and we've looked at coverage, we're working hard together with the brokers and the clients on digital platforms and services and tools. Now I see the focus is really on claims, because I'm working with captive clients, and I mean, it's a financial vehicle, and they want to know what's going to happen, what they're going to see. And it's hard to predict right now.
Yeah, I can imagine that that's really hard to predict, especially with, as you mentioned earlier, a lot of the scheduled procedures have been paused in many countries because of the coronavirus crisis. But that kind of leads us well into one thing that I wanted to ask all three of you, which is the challenges and the opportunities in the situation that we find ourselves in at the moment. And the challenges and opportunities for us to either work more centrally or more locally, how we can interact with the brokers and in this procedure. Elizabeth, can you tell us about your experience with clients and brokers first, and what kind of role they're taking, and what are the challenges and opportunities on a local and central level for you?
Yeah, well, you know, historically, we had a few meetings a year with our clients. We would meet in person with the brokers representing those clients. You know, maybe a few times a year, there were calls scheduled. Now we are working so closely. The partnerships, I think, are really strengthened. We are talking all day long, hence probably the issues that Barb mentions with the work stress. People are chained to their computers, but we're talking all the time. I really feel like at first I thought, oh, we're not getting, you know, we're having the meeting with our clients, with the brokers. We're sharing the information, but we're not getting the social aspect. We're not getting the lunch after the meeting. But now what I'm seeing is we're actually getting to know our intermediaries, our clients even better, because we're on the phone with them. We're looking at their rooms, you know, their dogs, their family pictures, their bookshelves, more than ever. And we seem to be maybe having a greater dialogue and perhaps getting to know our clients better. And I think that's really strengthened our partnerships with our brokers and our clients. So, you know, there could be some good things as long as we can manage the time that we're spending communicating, because it doesn't leave a lot of time to do the work. And I think that's what's falling over into after hours, is people are on Teams calls and different platforms and Zoom all day long, but the work still has to be done. So I do think that, you know, that's something that seems to have changed for us, but I would say we're busier than ever. You know, policies are still, we're still writing new business. We're still renewing policies. The overall environment of employee benefits hasn't changed. It's just the details have shifted a bit. But I do think, you know, we're going to be faced with some challenges, but I'm appreciative of the good partnerships that I think are strengthening through these past 6 months.
Yeah, that's a really important message that you're sending there, that it actually has brought us closer together. Dana, you work very close with the local HR teams in the market. Can you comment on this from your work with the locals, but also your central perspective, the strategy and the global picture that DPDHL has? What are the challenges and the opportunities that you see?
Yeah, I think, I mean, as Elizabeth had said, our day-to-day work hasn't really changed, but the details have changed. And I think that's the same for us as the global, but also with the local. So we have always had open lines of communications, and we've always discussed with them in terms of benefits and understanding their claims experience as Elizabeth mentioned, but we've always tried to focus on what's the root cause. So, I mean, if I look at one of the opportunities, one of the major incident or one of the major claims that we see, or the amount of claims, would be around the acute respiratory in a lot of different countries. And usually the first question that I'll ask to a local HR is, what is your sick leave policy? And they would say, oh, well, it's one day and then you need to have a doctor's note. So to me, trying to explain to them, well, that makes sense why your driver is acute respiratory, because as soon as someone's out, they have to go to the doctor, and they're usually not leaving without a few medications. And that shift, I think, I'm hoping what we see in a shift in our claims was is that it will start to go down, and maybe use that as a tool to have them understand, maybe you do need to look at your policies. Maybe you could do something that was more flexible. Because every year we do go to them with what is driving their claims. And so I'm hoping that this is an opportunity for them to take a step back and really think about that culture. So they're creating a culture of health, but you need the policies to align with it to help manage your claims. And so that's something that I see as a great opportunity for a lot of our organizations. And I think, of course, that the challenge is, as Elizabeth said, is understanding what's going to happen with the claims. We do, as at the group level, we do have a COVID task force, and we do understand, because we also are, of course, managing the life insurance. We do see what is going on with the deaths within the organization. So we are trying to look at where those hotspots are and how can we further help the local HRs and the local management try to get ahead of this. What are they doing? What do they need to change? Because that's what we're always looking at, is what is the root cause and how can we help them? How can we support them? Because they might not be experts in every area. So who can they reach out to locally? What types of service providers would be looking to a consultant? So leading them in the right direction, because they are not experts, to help manage the situation and to hopefully stay proactive as we have been in the past as we go through this.
Thank you. And challenges and opportunities from the EAP provider, what do you think is important to mention here?
Right. So as I said at the beginning, most organizations or lots of organizations are saying a call to action. We need a consistent benefit offering. We need to localize this across all of our locations. But we need it to have the depth and breadth that it's just, it's not a tick box, that it actually is responsive to the local needs and be and a program that has some standards that can be measured across all regions, but then has some adaptability by location. So I think creating programs and positioning that is related to the adoption of mental health by region. Some some locations are accustomed to and more comfortable with the language of mental health. Others need it to be focused on, you know, workplace wellness and education. So that flexibility. I think that predispositions, people that within your organization have already struggled, are being taxed even more. The reoccurring of a mental health issue or a relapse issue, the education around that and the awareness of the organization that will lead to more strain if there was a pre-existing situation. And I would like to also isolate women, the recognition that the COVID, and there's a lot of literature right now about, you know, the impact of COVID for women and the multiple roles they play and in traditional values and beliefs, cultures, that's even more dominant. And within that, the importance of, and as I think it was Dana was saying, the closed space, the rise in domestic violence, and the importance of promoting and ensuring safety around issues of domestic violence. And certainly the ability for people to be reassured that they can be in a small space and have a confidential conversation through online or chat, that it doesn't have to be in person and it doesn't have to be even be on a phone call. But if you need help and you need support, there's a way to do that even in a small space. And as stressful as that may be, it can be a lifeline for folks that are isolated.
Yeah, very true. We appear to be going into what has been referred to the a dark and difficult time in winter, while most certainly in the areas that we're based in, unless you're in Australia, you're facing summer or the Southern Hemisphere. But we're kind of going into winter, and maybe another 6 to 9 months before things return to something that resembles normal. What do you each think what this new normal will be like? And maybe I can start with Dana here. Do you think, what do you then, is the new normal for DHL?
I mean, we've had a very strong focus because there was a lot of things that didn't change for us because we are out on the road still. I think for the people working from home, I mean, we have seen, and I think it varies country by country, but there is definitely more flexibility in terms of working. Those who have started to go back into the office, it's definitely a more flexible working environment. But I don't know what the new norm is going to be like yet. I think we're looking at everything day by day, week by week, month by month, and trying to not make any assumptions in terms of what we see, because we don't know yet. So I think we're just trying to focus on keeping our employees safe and happy and engaged, because I think this is going on a lot longer than probably mentally anyone thought that it would be. And like you said, with it continuing, I think maybe if you are in a warmer, sunnier place, it might be a bit easier, but it still has been a good 7 or 8 months already that we've been doing this. And with no end in sight, we have to, what we're looking at is how can we impact to understand that and work with people through this time period.
Yeah, and it's very interesting from you, from a captive perspective, you're saying we shouldn't make any assumptions. And that's obviously becoming a little bit of a problem when we go into the insurance and renewal topic. Elizabeth, can you comment on that a little bit? What do we have to brace ourselves for while we're coming into renewal season with something that we've all never experienced, right?
Yeah. I wish I had a crystal ball. We are in the thick of renewal season, and honestly, day to day hasn't changed. I mean, the importance is renewing the policies with the appropriate benefits and competitive prices. I mean, this is what we're working. This is what we always worked on, and this is what we're working on now. I think there's going to be a real focus on mental health. I think there's going to be a real focus on watching claims trends. I think, any captive reports that we provide are going to be reviewed more thoroughly for the details of what's happening. And we're going to try to be making sense of that in the coming months. And then I would say, lastly, I think we'll continue to strengthen the partnerships with our broker partners and with our network partners, the network companies that we work with all around the world, and with our clients. And I think we're going to continue to have daily dialogues. I think, it's a great strengthening of these partnerships and showing the working together through this pandemic is going to get everyone through it. And, I wish we knew what the future holds, but I do think, it changes every month. We thought, who would have thought in March we would still be here in October. So, it's to be seen, to be determined.
Very true. Very true. Barb, from your perspective, the difficult times ahead of us, how do you see the next 6 to 9 months from a mental health support service perspective?
So I think that the toolbox has to be created. And I think the toolbox has a lot of soft skills in it. I think it includes appreciation, empathy, flexibility, really being able to engage with your employees to keep them strong and focused. I think vacations are important, and encouraging people to think about vacations in a flexible way. Maybe you don't take a week off. Maybe you take some shorter weeks, you know, just thinking about vacation, encourage vacation taking. Had we all delayed our vacation, we'd all be in really big trouble as an organization, but our wellness is connected to taking breaks and learning how to re-examine what that means in your home. I think training is important. Training is important to build your capacity, but training is a way to change your mindset and give you a break in your day-to-day work. And so offering more training within your organizations to adjust to all this adaptation, but also just, you know, training on resilience, training on change management. I always say to my team, training is almost like a vacation. It's new and it's fresh and it gets your brain thinking differently. Don't underestimate that. And then I think, you know, what's going to stick is the acceptance of virtual behavioral health. We are, and I do have a bit of a crystal ball. I know we're not going back to everything being dominated by in-person. I believe that with passion. I think the acceptance in our life to use technology and video in particular has been so readily open that it will change behavioral health forever, how people access what they expect and that they can get help in a variety of different ways. So I think that will change forever. What the balance will return to in, you know, 6 months, 2 years, I'm not sure, but it will be different. It will definitely be different on people's access.
Thank you so much. And Alan is back now with us to guide us through the Q&A. So if you have any questions, pop them into the Q&A box. I already saw there were some coming through.
As if by magic, I appear again. That's fantastic, ladies. Really, really great subject matter. We've got time for a couple of quick questions. So from Sachin at Global to Barb specifically, I think the first part of this question you've answered, basis your data, which were the key reasons for people being stressed, which obviously went through the work stress, financial stress and the work-life balance. But which regions and countries saw maximum spikes in utilization, he is asking.
Yeah, interesting. I actually captured that, so you're going to hear me changing my papers a little bit. The place where we saw the biggest spike in mental health distress was actually in Australia. And I think they were in the first wave of the second wave, where they were open, they were closed, they were open. And I think they've really felt the strain of that. I think then followed by the UK, if I look at the data we have, and then Canada, and then the US. So the US didn't show the same level of distress, even though they're you know, from us. I'm a Canadian. I watch what happens in the news and I think, oh my gosh, I'm stressed by so much change going on. But Australia showed at a regional level the biggest level of change in the stress index.
Okay, thank you. It's been well documented that, and indeed covered by you guys, that elective surgeries have been shelved in an awful lot of places, which clearly may have a long-term impact on life claims in terms of a tail to that. Has there been any modelling done on that, either within captives, Elizabeth, or is that something, Dana, that you've thought about?
From my perspective, I have not seen that modeling yet, but I know that it is happening. You know, at the head office level, it has not been shared. I don't know that it's been completed, but we're certainly following both life insurance, but also disability. LTD, you know, has a pretty long waiting period, so there's lots for us to be following and modeling, and I'm sure as soon as we have any type of information that we can share with our clients, we will do that, because, you know, we are following these trends and how it relates to all our lines of business, not just medical.
Sure. And Dana, yeah, I guess right back to the actual, sorry, on you go.
At DHL, we've done, so when we look at, from a captive perspective, we are always looking across all the lines of business and we are looking at many years when we look at our data. So we never take a short-term view, which I think has served us well in the past. But we are doing, we have done some modeling on, especially with the life claims and starting to with the disability and the impact of COVID. But we, because we look at the holistic picture and we've seen that there is a big impact for us, or the biggest impact so far has been on the life insurance. We started with modeling for that. But when we do the renewal this year, we will be looking at different scenarios because we will understand that the trends have gone down. So we'll probably do some analysis.
Thank you. Just wary of time. So one last question, and I'll put this to Danielle, actually. Are there specific topics that you believe organizations should focus on in these uncertain times? They might be very different depending on whether you are client, provider, or benefits network.
It is definitely mirroring what we've heard throughout the whole session. Moving to a virtual support service, and whether that is employee assistance program, telehealth, is super important. I still think that I've had a couple of conversations with organizations who've actually been asking us whether medical benefits should be maybe even removed because of financial considerations, etc. And it is still one of the most important benefits that we can put into place, a medical insurance for employees. So if it crosses organizations' mind whether they should take away the medical benefit, from my perspective, it's an absolute no. It is still considered, from the surveys that we see from human resources, that is what one of the most important benefit to have in place. Generally speaking, I hope that all this will bring us to a more focused and more strategic approach to health and well-being in general, that is embedded in policies, procedures, and the values of organizations. So I really have the hope that this crisis has actually lifted, again, a topic. We've been talking about this throughout the conversation, has lifted the topic to a new importance. And I really hope that we will see a more strategic approach across the board for any kind of benefit in the new normal.
Fantastic. Listen, I think we're right on time. Thank you very, very much, Generali Employee Benefits, and in particular Daniela and Elizabeth. Dana, for acting on the client side, thank you very, very much for participating today. And Barb, from the provider side on the EAP, some great insightful stuff. Ladies, that's been fantastic. Thank you very much again, and have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.